We're live and we're local. This is a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, June 20th, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, we'll hear about Field Day from the Juno Amateur Radio Club. Juno Lyric Opera and Friends will tell us about auditions and more for Here's Looking at You, Casablanca. We'll get the details about tonight's Juno Reentry Coalition Community Discussion, and the Douglas Community Methodist Church will highlight their upcoming community dinner. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note, music, and more, coming up right here on a Juno Afternoon. Quick look at weather. It's mostly sunny with highs around 80 today. Feels great. Tonight, partly cloudy with lows in the mid-50s. Tomorrow, partly sunny, highs in the mid-60s. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. The president of the National Congress of American Indians condemns the forced separation of immigrant children at the U.S.-Mexico border and says it harkens back to a dark period for many Native American families. In a written statement, Jefferson Keel said Native communities know too well the intergenerational psychological trauma that such policies have on parents and their children. Keel urges the president and Congress to take heed of what he calls abhorrent mistakes from the past. He mentions the time when the U.S. government forced Native children to attend boarding schools hundreds and even thousands of miles away from homes. He calls on officials to end the current policy of separating children from their parents who are held at the border. A lead opponent of the Enbridge Line 3 pipeline proposal in Minnesota says whatever the result of a pending decision by state regulators, both sides appear ready to continue fighting. The company, tribal officials, and members of the public spoke up at a standing room only meeting this week ahead of the scheduled decision on a permit for the project by the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. Five of Minnesota's Ojibwe bands have expressed opposition to the pipeline, along with environmental groups and the state's Department of Commerce. Honor the Earth Director Winona LaDuc says tribes and the state have concluded there's no benefit for the local economies.
The system works and the system doesn't buckle to $5 million of Canadian pipeline money, then there will be no pipeline permit issued.
LaDuc says her organization and many others are prepared to appeal the PUC's decision should the permit be approved. She says she expects the pipeline company will appeal if the permit is denied. LaDuc is Anishinaabe from White Earth, which along with three other Minnesota bands oppose the project outright. The Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe say they want a new pipeline that does not cross their reservation. The current project is slated as a replacement for an existing pipeline that runs from Canada to Superior, Wisconsin. Northern Plains tribes are calling for the Interior Department to keep Yellowstone National Park Supervisor Dan Wenk on board until after a program to relocate wild bison from the park onto their reservations is complete. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports.
Wenk says he believes he was forced out over disagreements with the Interior Department over bison population numbers, but he says he thinks Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke supports the tribal bison program.
I think this is something that my understanding, the secretary is wants to have happen. We want to have happen. APHIS wants to have happen. The states do, and the tribes do. So I think we're going to get there.
The program only needs a few signatures, and then tribes can receive wild bison onto their reservations next fall. Wenk says he has confidence the program will go forward, with or without him.
If it's decided that I have to leave Yellowstone before then, I have there's people in Yellowstone National Park who know this issue extremely well and will work with the next superintendent and the state, APHIS, and the tribes, and I think it will happen under any event.
But Blackfeet member Irvin Carlson, president of the Intertribal Buffalo Council, is suspicious about the timing of Wenk's removal.
Why is Dan being removed now, all of a sudden? No one was so close to making things happen, to being able to go to a tribal facility.
He's worried Wenk's replacement won't have the will to carry it through.
Educating the new guy as to what we've been doing and seeing if he's going to go forward with it and if he's friendly to that, if that's, or is he giving orders to do something else.
Supervisor Wenk says he believes he can get the signatures needed to finish the job in his final few weeks at Yellowstone. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by First Tribal Lending, NMLS 15009, the nation's most experienced Section 184 lending team. Info for home loans on and off the reservation available at onetribal.com. That's the numeral onetribal.com.
And by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at sanofsky.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guest today is David Bruce, representing the Juneau Amateur Radio Club. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Shelley.
Now, behind your name, you've also provided some letters and numbers. Is that your call sign?
Yes, it is.
What are they?
WL7BKA is mine. Each licensed amateur radio operator has his own individual call sign.
Pretty cool. I don't have one yet. I feel like I should. I'm on the radio a lot.
We give lessons frequently. You're more than welcome to come, and we give the exams, too.
Well, we'll talk more about that. First of all, what's the Juneau Amateur Radio Club, and what is your role in it?
Well, I handle membership and a lot of the paperwork and stuff like that in the club. The club is a group of people that are interested in electronics and getting on the air and talking to people around the world, either Morse code, for instance, by voice or by computer. A lot of different computer activities take place using computers to make contacts.
Really? I had envisioned a lot of like vintage technology associated with amateur radio club, but it sounds like some of it is more high tech.
If you don't have a lot of money, you have vintage gear. That if you're rich and can afford to buy the most recent gear, you can spend a lot of money getting ready to be on the air.
Now, the Juneau Amateur Radio Club provides some support from time to time with various events. Have you guys seen any action lately, any recent events where the club either provided support for a public event or for first responders?
Not recently, but we will on the 4th of July, we'll help with the parade. We generally help coordinate the floats and if something goes wrong, provide information to the people that need to resolve the problem. But we're prepared. We have within the Juneau Amateur Radio Club, there's another group called ARES, which is the Amateur Radio Emergency Service. These people practice constantly to respond to emergencies. And I believe they had an exercise this last Saturday where they had to get some information transmitted to Wasilla. They go around and find out what are the dead spots in Juneau where you can't get receive radio traffic or where you have to be in order to get back up, like back up in Silver Bow Basin, back up there with all the high hills. It's kind of hard to get radios. And they're ready to go on very, very short notice. They'll respond. The rest of the club, part of the reason we are given licenses by the federal government, FCC, is that one of the things we're supposed to be prepared to do is, in an emergency, help first responders, fire departments, police departments, emergency, disaster people send traffic. We practice being able to be self-contained, not being on the power grid or having to have any of the local services the community provides. That we provide our own power source, our own radios, usually in our vehicles, or we can take them someplace and set them up. ARES can do it immediately. It would take me a half hour, 45 minutes to pull my gear out of my garage and put it in my truck and get to a location.
That makes me feel a lot safer, knowing that we've got that safeguard in place for communications in case something should happen.
Usually in a disaster, it's the first day or two that they use us, mm-hmm. that because equipment breaks. The police, fire have stationary facilities, and things happen. You know, a tower falls down or something like that. I was in the Fairbanks flood back in the 60s, and the police department had all the radios in the basement of the public safety building.
Oh, no.
And they were the first to go off the air. But amateur radios are there. We help until the emergency service responders can get back on the air with their equipment. And then we generally pass traffic for people. Somebody in Seattle might call us on one of our frequencies and say, can you check and see if Sam Smith is okay? And we'll do that and tell them you try and get a hold of your people, or we'll send a message back for you.
Well, it sounds like a very interesting hobby. And being in communications myself, I admire all the work that goes into it. But this weekend you have an event, and the reason that you're here today is to talk about that. So please tell the good people all about what's happening this Saturday.
Okay. The Juno Aperture Radio Club will be participating in the American Radio Relay League annual field day. This is the purpose of field day is to allow us to practice our emergency contacts around the U.S., some pretty long distance contacts like Florida. And I think we've got a few colonies off of Florida somewhere else that we'll try and make contacts in Canada. We're divided up into 84 different sectors. We try and make a contact with each one of them. We have a good time. We try and contact as many people as we possibly can, but at least one from each of the 84 different sectors.
So it's an exercise, but it's also
practice. Yes.
And it sounds like it's a lot of fun, and there's a picnic involved.
Well, yeah, it's a picnic. We always have hot dogs, hamburgers available, and anybody that's interested in amateur radio is more than welcome to come. We have people giving explanations of what's going on. We have some equipment building exercises going on. The Aries group will be giving a discussion of what they do. We'll have a flea market, just about anything you can think of related to amateur radio.
What's the farthest location you've reached on a radio, like when you're trying to communicate with other people?
I don't know how to tell, but I understand it is possible to go clear around the Earth.
Wow.
That you can broadcast in one direction, and a fraction of a second later, a very small fraction, you'll hear an echo where you're receiving off the back of your antenna. So basically anywhere on the Earth that when the conditions are right, you can make a contact.
And what's some of the gear that you work with in the Amateur Radio Club?
Well, we start out initially amateur radio was spark gap equipment where you made a lot of static on the air and it was in Morse code and people maybe 50 or 60 miles away could receive it. Plus, anybody else that happened to have anything on the air lost any reception. But gradually we got into radios talk, people talking back and forth. Initially, we were assigned all the frequencies above the commercial radio bands simply because nobody thought that they had any use. Well, we showed that they did have a lot of use, and gradually the FCC came along, started taking away from us. Now we're assigned certain bands, fairly narrow bands to operate in, and all the way from well below the broadcast bands to I think it's 2200 gigahertz, which is way up there. It's not too far from light. Anyways, we use a number of manufacturers, Kenwood, ICOM, Yaesu, Elocraft, and there's some more coming on the market that sell equipment. They're making new advances all the time in being able to clear static off the air so you can hear a person talking. And then a lot of people get into computers, and then they basically talk through the computer, computers hooked to their amateur radio, and broadcast through that system. And then it receives, and they carry on a conversation.
And I understand there's an increase in message traffic due to severe weather events in recent years. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Generally, whenever there's a severe hurricane, it takes out most of the cell phone towers and some of the emergency responders equipment. So the American Radio Relay League asks amateur radio operators to get involved in the area to help the first responders pass information back and forth, mainly because they have power through their vehicle or batteries or whatever they're transmitting on.
That's very cool.
But it is getting more and more as I realize some people say climate change isn't happening, but something is happening. And we're getting more very severe storms. So more and more we're being called upon.
Did you know we have a Radio To Go kit here at KTOO that we actually sent down to Puerto Rico last year?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's there helping them out right now. All right, David Bruce from the Juneau Amateur Radio Club. Field day is this Saturday at the Hagevig Regional Fire Training Center. That's on Sherwood Drive. It technically starts at 10. The picnic begins at 12.
Yeah.
And this is a rain or shine event open to everyone.
Right. And but just curious, come along, bring your kids, because kids get interested in this stuff, and they tend to go from being interested in radio into the sciences. We tend to lose all the young people we train to get a license. Then they go off to college, and they don't come back. They go to some other ham club.
What do you look forward to the most about Field Day?
We get a lot of our old friends that we haven't seen for a while there. And we get to talk to them, see how they're doing. It's just a nice social gathering. And off to the side, we've got people trying to make as many points as they possibly can.
Well, thanks for being here today, David. Is there anything else you'd like to add about Field Day?
Only that it's a really fun hobby, and if you're all interested, come on out and take a look. And there'll be lots of people there that'd be more than happy to talk to you about it and explain what's going on.
Well, thanks for talking to us about it today.
Thank you, Shelley.
June 30th is an important day here at KTOO. That's the day our annual budget cycle closes, when all of the money coming in to pay for the services you use every day needs to be secured. That means all business sponsorships finalized, all fundraising events finished, and all membership contributions received. That's where you come in. With $30,000 in membership support to raise by June 30th, your gift today is so important. Give online at ktoo.org.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall. Serving Juneau since 1978, Ron's Apothecary is providing medication information, nutritional supplements, and homeopathic remedies. More information at ronsapothecary.com.
You're tuned into a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are a crazy fun bunch. I've got John Clow,
crazy.
Julie Copins, and Colette Costa. Welcome.
What?
Hi. Thanks for having us.
A lot of pressure already. Jeez.
Yeah, so what brings this dream team together?
Well, I guess I'm sort of the cause of that. This is a collaborative production that's being put together between Juno Lyric Opera and Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater. And we're calling it Here's Looking at You, Casablanca. And it's sort of difficult to describe because no one's done anything quite like this in Juno before. This is going to be what we're calling an immersive cabaret experience inspired by the film, followed by a screening of the film. And we're going to take the Rockwell Ballroom and turn it into Rick's Cafe Americana, set in Casablanca in 1941. And we're going to have a mixture of live acting, improv acting, live jazz, and singing from the stage. And that's going to go on. You're sort of going to be in an interactive environment, learning about the film, interacting with some of the characters, hearing a lot of the wonderful music from it. And then we're going to follow that up by screening the film. And oh, by the way, the bar is open the whole time.
Oh, by the way, you buried the lead on that one. All right. So what made you call it Here's Looking at You, Casablanca?
Well, you know, Here's Looking at You, Kid is the famous line from the show. And since I sort of wrote this thing, I decided to pick that for the title. So that's an easy answer to that one.
Well, and it's historical, too. This year marks the 75th anniversary that the film was released widely in the U.S. I think it's when 47 was the official release date, but 48 was when it rolled out.
Yeah, 42.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. I did my math wrong. So it's a time to really revisit this film. And this is Julie Copen speaking, and I'm going to be directing the theater component, the acting component of this cabaret. The more that we talk about it around town, I'm sure, John, you have found this, everybody has a Casablanca connection. We talked to one woman whose father, you know, had dementia, and he watched this movie every day for like the last 5 years of his life. And it was that important. It was his touchstone. And other people have such, you know, strong connections to the stories of the film, the stories of refugees during war fleeing to the U.S. seeking asylum. I mean, that's very timely.
Yes.
So this is a good time for us to really look at this film that was so really kind of a sleeper when it first came out, but has become an American icon. The performances are iconic. Bogart, Bergman, all the people who were part of that, so many of them have real life connections to the war story in the film. And it's just a great time to celebrate it together, to see this film, and collect and talk about how people are actually going to see the film and to step inside of it and live it. So we're going to look at it, we're going to live in it, and just have a blast together at the Rockwell.
I'm excited about the interactive element of it. Mm-hmm. But while we're talking about the connections to the movie, what does Casablanca mean to each of you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I just get all teary-eyed just thinking about it.
All right, calm down. It's going to be okay.
Just take a breath. Well, when I was 7 years old, I got mono. Please don't ask how. And long story short, I had to stay home for days from school, which was death to me. Because it was
Does he like school?
I really like school. Yeah, yeah. Nerd from way back. And the only thing on TV at that time, pre-cable kids, was this guy in Detroit had this local show, Bill Kennedy at the Movies. And he would show movies from 1 to 5 p.m. He showed two movies a day. And that week, he was showing a bunch of Bogart films. And the first one I saw was a double feature of Casablanca and The Big Sleep. And I was hooked. And I was feverish, I admit, and 12, but that was it. And so it became one of my favorite films of all time.
How about you, Julie?
Yeah. The first time I saw the film in a cinema, I think I was in college, and like the local film club at IU in Bloomington showed the movie. And we just thought, oh, let's go see this black and white movie. And when I was watching it, I remembered when I was a little girl watching it on TV with my father, who is deceased. And we watched it together. And it began a string of sitting down with him watching a lot of black and white movies. He also loved Witness for the Prosecution and Mutiny on the Bounty. And I remember him commenting to me, like, I was the only one of us kids, there were four of us, who would ever, like, sit down and watch a black and white movie with him. He's like, you're not supposed to like this stuff, you know. Because I was a kid, but I loved it. I loved the performances. They were so real. And then watching it in the cinema with an audience is a completely different experience. And now rewatching it, as we've all been doing in preparation for we're having auditions this weekend, which we should talk about too. Rewatching it again, I'm struck by the economy of the storytelling. It's not a long movie. It's less than 2 hours long. It moves. The quality of the writing is really, I think, stunning, ahead of its time. It's so subtle. The humor is so understated. And you compare it to a lot of dramatic films today, romantic films. as you watch it again, I think everyone reckons there is a reason why it's become a classic. It is that good. And it is a movie that rewards repeat viewing. So for me, at different times in my life, I came to appreciate different aspects of it.
Rewards repeat viewing. I like that. I have a few movies that I definitely repeatedly view. Yeah.
But John is really, of the three of us, probably the biggest Casablanca freak.
And this is his
baby.
Well, it's just there are so many great characters in the movie and so many great character actors, but they're all really wrestling with the same question. When is it time to stand up and do the right thing in the face of really authoritarianism? And so many of the members of that cast were real-life refugees from Nazi Germany and Europe. Most of those wonderful actors that you see playing those people passing through Rick's Cafe trying to find their way to their own letters of transit out of town, they were real-life refugees from Germany, Austria, Czechoslovakia, France. They all had their own stories how they came to be in Hollywood in 1942. It's because they'd been driven out of Europe by Hitler. And they were all wrestling with that question. When do you stand up and how do you stand up to do the right thing, even if maybe it puts you in a tough spot, even if maybe it risks your neck? And that's what this movie is all about, plus set with one of the greatest love stories of all time. I mean, oh my gosh. You know, he sends her off with at the end. So it really is a classic movie. But with all these characters, we need people to fill some of these roles.
That's right.
And so we are having auditions this week and this Saturday. And Julie, you're the director. You should talk about the auditions.
I should probably explain, because people are asking, well, are you going to act out the movie? Well, no, we're not going to do that. And what we're planning is a roughly 1 hour sort of pre-show cabaret. As people come into the Rockwell Ballroom, they get a drink, they have some Moroccan appetizers. They will be surrounded by an ensemble of costumed characters from that might be somewhat recognizable from the film. Some characters may be more suggested by the period and the situation. We're going to have, a croupier at the roulette table. We're going to have a barmaid. We're going to have someone maybe selling cigarettes, whatever, what would have been happening at Rick's Cafe. And everyone's going to have a backstory. Everyone's going to have sort of maybe a prop that's something that's important to them that maybe they've carried with them. Maybe they're trying to sell to get passage to a safer place. And over the course of this hour, you're going to hear some of the wonderful songs from the film. Of course, As Time Goes By, which we all know, but there are lots of other great songs that, again, when you watch the film again, you're like, oh, that song is in that movie? Oh, I forgot. Great, great music. We have some fantastic singers already lined up who are going to do big spotlight solos. But the ensemble that we'll be casting this weekend is going, they're going to be doing a little bit of singing, like group singing. There's that wonderful climactic moment where the Germans sing their anthem and the French sing their anthem, and it's a conflict of cultures played out in music, and we're going to try to reenact that moment. But and there will be maybe some snippets of dialogue. So if you come to audition, you might get to utter some of those iconic phrases. I came for the waters. You're in a desert. I was misinformed. All those great. So you're going to get a chance to do some of that. But the performance will be, we're not going to try to do the movie. Nobody can redo the movie. But it's going to be, I hope, a live experience that will transport you to a place and a time that has something to say to us in our own place and time, and that will absolutely excite you to then settle in, watch the film again with your friends and loved ones,
and have fun.
It sounds like a blast.
Yeah.
All right. So when and where can we try out?
Yeah. So we're going to do this weekend at the Saturday at the Gold Town. Colette, who's co-producing, she's generously offered her space for us. It's a sign-up kind of deal. So what I suggest is people go to the Juno Lyric Opera website if you want to audition. And we are looking for literally anybody, characters. If you don't have improv experience but you'd like to try, we will train you. We will teach you. If you've never been in a production before but you love the movie Casablanca, or you've always dreamed of playing someone from the 1940s, you always wanted to try being an evil Nazi, whatever is your motivation, we're not going to question it. We're going to welcome you and your talent. If you want to sign up, so go to the Lyric Opera website, which is
www.junoopera.org.
Right. And click on, I think, upcoming events.
Upcoming events, and it'll bring you to all the information about the auditions and how to contact Julie to sign up.
Right. So basically, people are emailing me to assign a time, and I can go ahead and tell folks that. My email is jycopens, jycopens@gmail.com. My last name looks like Coppens, but it's pronounced Copens. Email me, tell me you want an audition time, and I will sign you up. We are filling up, so I would suggest people don't wait too long if you want a spot. Roughly 10 to 15 minutes of interview. We're going to have you do a little bit of very basic singing, like Row, Row, Row Your Boat, just to get a sense of your voice. We're going to have you talk a little bit about your performing experience. If you've done improv, you might do a little bit of an improv exercise. We might play with some accents just to get a sense of your skills there. And then from that group on Saturday, we're going to, we'll see, but my plan is we'll have a group of maybe 10 or 12 that we want to get together on Sunday for a callback. We're going to get people together and see how they interact as a group, feel for the chemistry. And from that, we're going to start creating the show. So it's not like we have a specific cast of characters even set. We sort of want to see who comes through the door and what skills they bring and what personalities they bring. And then the performance will evolve from that, and we'll start rehearsals late in September. We're going to do some improv workshops. We're going to do some dialect work, and we will create this show together. It's going
right,
to be really special.
Right, because auditions are this weekend, yeah, but the performance is not until November.
Right, right.
Performances
right.
are in November.
Yeah,
yep.
Cool. Well, that sounds great. Thank you for all that information. Yeah. Colette, do you want to add anything about the screening of the show, the screening of the movie that's going along with the performance?
So, yeah, on my end, I mean, I love the show aspect, and it's something, this whole idea is something I've been wanting to do for a long time. I was really excited when John came in to talk about it. And my main job is to make sure that we have, excuse me, the highest quality film viewing experience that we can have. So we're looking into different materials for that, but we'll have basically Rockwell will transform from, we'll still be in Rick's Cafe, but the movie theater will be there. We'll bring our screen in, et cetera, et cetera. You don't have to leave. It'll all be there. But once that aspect starts, it's movie time, it's quiet time, phones are off, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we got a beautiful quality print of it. What I will do, what I'm hoping to do as well, for people who just maybe don't want to go out and have a big evening, I will also have movie-only showings scheduled at Gold Town, and I'm working on getting a 35-millimeter print of it, which is very difficult. But there will be some movie screenings at different times than the actual show if you just want to, or if you just need to see the movie four or five times like I do.
All right, so here's looking at you. Auditions are this, or here's looking at you, Casablanca. Auditions are this Saturday and Sunday. The show is in November. I'm sure you guys will be back to talk about it a few more times now and then. And to audition, you need to email jycopens@gmail.com. Yeah. So that's that for Here's Looking at You, Casablanca. All right. What else do you guys want to talk about while you're here?
Well, just real quickly here, while you're on that Juno Lyric Opera website, www.junoopera.org, please take a look at our next upcoming event, which is the Midsummer Vocal Festival featuring Broadway, film, and television music this year with Dr. Byron McGilvery, our world-renowned choral director who's coming up. It's going to be from July 5th to July 21st. It's non-audition to participate in it. It's a fantastic choral experience. And also, if you want to do a solo, it tells you how you can audition for doing solos in that show as well. So I've done that workshop with him many, many times. It's a lot of fun. I encourage people to give it a shot.
All right, great. Well, thank you all very much for being here today. Did you get to say everything you wanted to say?
You know what? I just want to throw in quickly, just because they'll be clamoring. There is another show of RBG.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
RBG. Yes. It was so good.
You want to talk about the most beautiful love story ever, John?
Mm-hmm.
She's Marty right up there, yep. And Ruthie. Mm-hmm. Holy moly. So RBG, Saturday at 4:30. I might add some other ones, but that's for sure. And otherwise, we're showing this cool new biopic called Mary Shelley about Frankenstein author Mary Shelley this weekend.
Yeah, that's my name.
Cool.
Well, thank you all very much for being here today, and good luck with auditions this weekend.
Thanks, Shelley.
Thank you.
Hello, Sam.
Hello, Miss Elsa. I never expect to see you again.
It's been a long time.
Yes, ma'am. A lot of water under the bridge.
Some of the old songs, Sam.
Yes, ma'am.
Where is Rick?
I don't know. I ain't seen him all night.
When will he be back?
Not tonight no more. He ain't coming. He went home.
Does he always leave so early?
Oh, he never. Well, he's got a girl up to the Blue Parrot. He goes up there all the time.
You used to be a much better liar, sir.
Leave him alone, Miss Elsa. You bad luck to him.
Play it once, Sam. For all time's sake.
I don't know what you mean, Miss Elsa.
Play it, Sam. Play as time goes by.
Oh, I can't remember it, Miss Elsa. I'm a little rusty on it.
I'll hum it for you. Sing it, Sam.
You must remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo.
Hi, this is Lauren with Juneau Parks and Recreation. Splash into summer with Juneau Pools. Take advantage of our new $129 summer swim pass for all ages, providing admission for lap and open swims, tot time, channel walking, water fitness classes, and more. Valid May 1st through October 1st. Visit us at junopools.org and like us on Facebook.
Support for KTOO comes from Pavitt Health and Fitness, locally owned and open 24/7, offering fitness classes, childcare, and summer memberships for exercising on those rainy days. More information at gopavitt.com. Pavitt Health and Fitness, for your total well-being.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. My next guests in the studio are representing the Juno Reentry Coalition. Welcome to the show, Terry Tibbett and Don Haviger.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So for those who don't know, what is the Juno Reentry Coalition, and what's their role here in the community?
The Juno Reentry Coalition is a community group. Anybody that wants to join is more than welcome to be a part of our assembly, if you will. And we really are working on the issue of making sure that the community can and will connect with those coming out of incarceration in such a way that folks succeed in reentry into the community after incarceration.
And I could add, too, that we have the organizations that participate are the Job Center here in town, who helps people with reentering with employment and training support, Haven House, which is a reentry facility transitional living home for women coming out of incarceration. JAMI, the health and wellness, they have a case manager that we work with to help people transition out easier. The Alaska Mental Health Board, Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, they participate. NAMI, mm-hmm. which is Mental Health, National Alliance for Mental Illness. So there are a lot of different agencies and individuals that participate in the Juno Reentry Coalition.
And what's the scope, or maybe I should say, what's the snapshot of mental health and substance use treatment and behavioral health and reentry problems and solutions right now? I know it's kind of a big question.
I'll take that one because I work for the Mental Health Board and Drug and Alcohol Board. I think everyone's pretty clear on the fact that it's a growing problem, that people with mental illness and substance use disorders there are more and more people experiencing those disorders, and the capacity to serve them with treatment or assisted living, employment, all those things is not at the level of the need. So we definitely, if you want a snapshot, there's not enough treatment and assistance and support for people with mental illness and drug and alcohol problems. But with that said, the legislature this year passed some bills and some budget items that really will seriously put a dent in that statewide. I can talk about – that's another topic. But there's $12 million towards substance abuse treatment to really address in a very significant way the opioid crisis that the state is experiencing, plus more treatment and support inside prisons. There's more money for that, and there is money for halfway houses to increase their substance abuse treatment and their mental health. Well, substance abuse treatment. So, yeah, there's movement. The policymakers realize that the problem exists. It's growing, and I think there's an active effort to address it.
Well, that sounds like good news. Slowly but surely, chipping away.
Mm-hmm.
Is Juneau unique compared to other cities, like in Alaska or in the U.S.? No, you're shaking your head.
We're not unique. Terry mentioned that all of Alaska is, in fact, all of our nation is faced with the opioid crisis, and so we're not exempt from that. Juneau, like other places recently, we've heard in the press, a rise in crime, often linked with addiction. And so because we're not unique, there are, like Juneau, other communities across the state that have recently worked to get coalitions so that we really are trying to address that recidivism rate and ultimately have safer communities. And the whole concept of that is if you have the necessary supports and links to a healthier, more successful reentry into your community, then you won't be creating new victims, if you will, with new crime. And so that's our goal, a safer community and success stories.
One of the reasons you're here today is to let our listeners know about the community meeting or community discussion that's happening tonight. What is that going to be about?
Well, the Juneau Reentry Coalition hosts a community meeting every other month. So this is our every other month June. And each time we host a community meeting, it's on a different topic related to reentry. So we've had family support, the topics of family support, peer support, education and training, job support, housing. We've done a lot of different themes in our community meetings. So tonight's theme is the behavioral health services in the community. And of course, behavioral health means mental health and substance abuse treatment, those kinds of services. So we have panelists from JAMI Health and Wellness that are going to discuss what they do. They're going to kind of give a brief overview of how they are addressing the behavioral health services in town. Rainforest Recovery and Bartlett Hospital will be there talking about what they do. And Front Street Clinic will be there talking about what they do. So it'll be a very short beginning with a kind of a panel presentation of what services are available, what they're doing, followed by a longer discussion inviting community members to speak and ask their questions, get their clarification on what's going on, offer suggestions, talk about barriers, the things that they see what they see is missing or what's needed. And then we're going to kind of extend it tonight for a little bit longer than we normally do to offer a chance for people to talk about their real life examples. And that'll happen at the end.
That's great. What motivates you to be involved with the Reentry Coalition?
Well, for me, I think folks ought to have a second chance. And when I think about my early career, I think about school, if I go back that far, or even thinking about my father a few times, all giving me second chances after I failed at something. And so I just think it's as American as apple pie.
And I guess I'll add that for me, it's besides it being part of my job, it's also my passion. My community is the place I live, the place I want to feel safe. I know that a lot of criminal behavior is often driven by addiction and or mental illness. And when you do take care of those two things, if you can get someone into treatment, if they can get on a road to recovery in some way, that their criminal behavior stops. That happens all the time. We have statistics all over the place that says if you can address the addiction, if you can address the underlying mental illness or trauma, whatever it is that's causing the person to act out criminally, if you can address that, chances are they will stop repeating their criminal behavior. And so understanding that, then there is, for me, it's a passion to try to make sure that those services are available so that we can serve people and help them reduce their own tendency to produce, to commit crimes. And I should say there are lots and lots of people also who it's not about addiction and it's not about mental illness, or I guess you could argue it is a mental illness, but there's some people that we are afraid of that have some serious sociopathic or psychopathic tendencies that, I mean, jails were built for people that are maybe not likely to change their behavior. But for the people who it is possible for them to change their behavior, we certainly want to give them that opportunity so they can live safely in the community and so as citizens we can live safely in our communities as well.
Maybe one thing I could add, if I may, is that really 95% of those that go to one of our Alaska facilities return to their community. They've paid their time, or they've done their time, they paid for the crime. And so really, the Reentry Coalition is trying to acknowledge that and then help provide a pathway, because really the work is theirs, but we can assist through connections. Terry talked about case management. We now have that case manager helping them come up with a plan to succeed at reentry after paying for the crime, really.
And let me add, too, that besides the case manager he's talking about with that JAMI Health and Wellness is basically providing, I guess, through grant funds, there's also Haven House provides case management, Gassineau Human Services provides case management, the Second Chance program from Tlingit and Haida, which is kind of on hiatus right now, but they've provided case management. So there are lots and lots of entities that are participating in this, and we all come together under the banner, if you will, of the Juneau Reentry Coalition.
That's great. Well, on those hopeful notes, the discussion about behavioral health services and people returning to the community is tonight. Northern Light United Church, Wednesday. Tonight is Wednesday, June 20th, 6 to 7:30, and that's at 400 West 11th Street. Anything else you'd like to add?
Please join us.
Yep.
Thank you both for doing what you do.
Thank you.
She's the only one, yeah, and so I roll with her. Ooh, that's how it's supposed to be, living life with loved ones close to me. Shh, this is the remedy, and I got the recipe, I don't need no Hennessy. Yeah, it's been 9 months now, haven't had a drink and I'm starting to see clear now. I'm putting all my fears down, I can hear the cheers now, seeing peace signs when I look around. Young homie, what you tripping on? Looking at life like, how did I get it wrong? Life's too short, gotta leave it alone. To my brothers and sisters, from where we get along. Hey, young homie, what you tripping on? Looking at life like, how did I get it wrong? Life's too short, gotta leave it alone. To my brothers and sisters, from where we get along. Open up your eyes, look around. Homie, can you see how it's going down? Brothers locked up, sisters knocked up. If you want to build your love up, put your hate down. Ooh, that's the only way to live.
We're in a final push here at the station to raise the funds to meet our annual budget.
And one of the ways we meet those funding needs is through events like Only Fools Run at Midnight.
Run for Public Radio!
And we've done all we can to make the event the best it can be, with an added beer garden,
a new course,
running music,
and a new start time of 11 p.m.
11 p.m.
We hope you'll join us in celebrating Solstice and your local public radio station
by registering at ktoo.org/foolsrun.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon, and I'd like to welcome to the show Pastor Jason Cornish from the Douglas Community United Methodist Church, and you are the only person on the show today who's appearing on a Juneau Afternoon for the very first time.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so very much for having me out. It's a wonderful opportunity.
Well, I hope you're not too nervous. Luckily, you've got a background in public speaking. What's your role at the Methodist Church?
I'm a pastor there at the Douglas Community United Methodist Church. I've been there for about a year now, and actually been a United Methodist pastor for some years now. So the experience in public speaking is something definitely that I've had some experience with. So this is a little different, but not terribly too different, hopefully.
You're doing great so far. Apart from worship, what is the church's role in the community? You have some things you like to focus on. Most definitely.
The church is a wonderful pillar of the community, not only providing support as far as personnel, but also providing support as a place where people can meet. I know we have AA there. We have some meals that are had there with senior lunch, usually on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have different programming during the week for different persons, and it's always available and open as another place that the community, not only Douglas, but Juneau, wide, can actually use and be participatory in. Our main focus currently actually is one of the ones that we've had for about the last several years, is finding a way that we can continue to be relevant in the community and providing the services that the community really needs. So looking at all the different things that the Juneau Douglas community needs, we've kind of isolated our focus and taking a really hard look at food inequity as it relates to school-aged children. So making sure that that is something that gets taken care of. Being a former teacher myself, I definitely can understand how you can't focus if you can't, if your stomach is growling and you can't really learn as well as you really want to if you have other things on your mind, like when's the last time I ate and when's the next time I'm going to eat. So the church providing those facilities through consortiums and other relationships throughout the community is something that's really big, not only my heart, but specifically the church's heart and then the church's agenda as far as how we spend money and how we go about missions. We do different things through some public grants as well as some private ones to help facilitate that for the schools. In the larger constructs, we're taking care of most of the schools, not specifically as our church, but the consortium that we work with is taking care of most of the schools here in the Juneau area that choose to participate. And that's all but one school who doesn't find that that will be necessarily a need for them for their current demographic. And then another school has found additional funding through one of their clubs there at the school. So they take care of it. But pretty much the rest of the schools, they do utilize the resources that we provide through Juneau Feed the Hungry, as well as the other organizations that we're a part of.
How does it work getting food into the schools? Do you accept donations and facilitate distribution?
We do some of that distribution, but I know for the Gastineau schools as well as some of the other schools that Aldersgate, Northern Light, and Douglas Community specifically do, we actually go and we put bodies in the cafeteria in the morning and actually feed children through working with the public school system. We do backpack lunches as well for those kids who have been identified to have issues with food inequity to make sure that over the weekend that they can actually do and have those meals to go throughout the weekend, as well as do summer programs through Lemon Creek and some other identified targeted areas throughout the community that have proven to have difficulties with food inequity. So several different venues to get that taken care of. We participate also at the Glory Hole at least once a month. So we're taking care of just the general problem of hunger and food inequity. And it's just a passion that we have that we continue to work in that regard.
I honestly wouldn't have thought that it was a big problem here in Juneau. How did it emerge? Yeah. How did it get on your radar?
Well, this at the church happened long before me. I wish I could take credit for it, but the wonderful people that I have an opportunity to watch over at Douglas Community through processes of being involved in the community and being plugged into the school specifically, found that there were kids that were not doing well or performing well or behavioral problems. And then when they sought to find the root of what, those issues might be or why is this child acting this way, they went and found that, a lot of the kids that were there were having issues trying to find food. In my experiences as a teacher, I've, known people or kids who, only eat at school. Mm-hmm. They don't eat at home. So, whatever they get, they try to, hoard at school because they know that, they're trying to either supply for a little sister or a big brother kind of thing at home. So, they get as much as they can at school so that they can help, what's missing or the deficit at home. And that's a very sad situation to be in. And I think that that's a situation that crosses all racial boundaries, no matter, what your demographic makeup is. That's an issue that is citywide. That is a issue that affects affects and touches us all. And with the kids being our future, with the kids being the next generation of the leaders, the politicians, the doctors, the so forth and so on, it's very important to us to make sure that we provide them with the best first step that they can possibly take. And we're all a part of that. We're all a community. We're all a village. And no place is more like that than Juneau. So I think that we all have a very important role in doing that work, and we can all definitely benefit from that work as well.
And the main reason you came on the show today is to talk about the community meal that's coming up on the 4th of July. Is that right?
Indeed, indeed.
So tell us all about that.
Most definitely. Typically, for the 4th of July, there's a big to-do. There's fireworks. There's parades. There's bicycles.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of stuff that
it's
goes on.
It's my favorite
on.
Holiday.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the greatest holidays here that we celebrate as a community. Typically, we do a wonderful barbecue. And being from the lower 48, specifically the Southeast, I'm used to, barbecue. And when I came on as pastor here at the church, I see how much goes into the actual barbecue. We have a pit behind the church, and we actually roast the meat for hours and hours and hours to get it to the most delicious capacity that it could possibly be at. We have coleslaw. We have potato salad. We have baked beans, not just your regular baked beans, but award-winning baked beans.
Oh, yeah.
And then we offer also conversation during that time. But drinks, we have lemonade and water, of course, and then coffee to kind of facilitate, community conversations. We wanted to make sure that this year it was something that we offered. And we did so with a thought in mind. Typically, as I said before, we would usually offer this with a monetary amount that was attached to it. But we feel as though that the community is at a point now where we can actually trust in God and trust in the faith that we have in God to say, community, we have a need, and our need are the children. Our need is the future. Our need is food inequity. This is what our mission is. And as a community, we would like your support and like your help. So it is definitely by donation. So if it's $5 or $500 or whatever the amount is, we're definitely taking donations for that, but we want to specifically isolate this particular event as a way to give back to the community because, like you know, the 4th of July is in the middle of summer, and different families may not have the facilities whereby which they can actually provide for an extra meal. Or if you like to donate but you don't know, want to get home and have to cook immediately and figure out what's to put on the barbecue immediately, let us do the cooking for you. But we would definitely like if you would definitely consider working with us in a financial means or boots on the ground. It's definitely needed as well as we continue to facilitate what needs to go forth in the community as far as food inequity.
So that's on the 4th of July. And what time does that start?
4th of July starting at 11 a.m. And it's lasting.
At the church?
Yeah, at the church. At the church. It's down in Grant Hall. And most of the people on the parade route know our church because that's the spot where a lot of people go to the bathroom. So a lot of people will be familiar with the church. It'll be down in Grant Hall. And we'll definitely see you guys there.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. I loved hearing about the menu. That's exactly what my grandma used to make on our 4th of July barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
And thanks for doing what you do. I hope you come back on a Juneau afternoon another time. And I hope that everybody comes out to the 4th of July community dinner at the Douglas Community United Methodist Church, 11 a.m., July 4th. Thanks for being here, Jason.
Thank you. You have a great day, Shelley.
Thanks for tuning in today to a Juneau Afternoon. Tomorrow I'll be hosting again, and we'll hear about Sunday's performance by the Juneau Cabaret. You'll also learn how to prepare incoming kindergartners for a successful school year and get pumped up for this weekend's Solstice 5K. Also find out how you can make a recommendation about electric vehicle parking and charging. Tune in tomorrow night at 7 for the latest episode of Intelligence Squared. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. I'm also filling in as producer this summer. If you'd like to be on a Juneau Afternoon, go to ktoo.org and click Contact Us. Until tomorrow, have a great Juneau evening.